Hey, Maeve, I answered, plugging my ear with my finger and sliding out of the booth.
Hey, I got your message, but I was stuck in court. What's up?
She asked. I ducked behind a large potted plant next to the host stand. Did Dad ever mention a Mary Louise Upshaw to you?
Dad mentioned a lot of people to me. Is she from Knockemout?
She was local-ish. She worked at the post office. I didn't have much time to do any digging, but it looks like she was convicted of drug charges. I think she's the mother of Dad's law school protege, Alan.
It's ringing a vague bell, but this was probably a few years ago, before the cancer and the move, Maeve said.
Before the beginning of the end.
Yeah, that's probably the right timeline, I agreed. He wasn't her attorney, was he?
Maeve asked.
No, I think she had a public defender. She got 20 years. First-time offender. For possession? That's excessive even for Virginia.
I thought so, too. It turns out his mother's case is why Alan went to law school in the first place. Would you mind looking into it? You know, in the spare time you don't actually have.
Yeah, I'll do some digging and get back to you.
In return, I'll take Chloe to play rehearsal for the next two nights, I volunteered.
Best aunt ever, Maeve said, affection in her voice. What am I going to do when you have kids of your own?
Huh, it's just me and the cat for now. I gotta go. I'm with Lena and Naomi. I'll pick up Chloe tonight. Love you.
Love you. Bye.
I disconnected.
What was that about?
Lena asked when I returned to the table. Just some papers of Dad's I found. Get this. My mom wants me to give them to Lucian. Naomi's brows winged up in surprise.
Is your mom unaware of the mutual animosity?
Oh, she's aware. I think she just wants us to find a way to be friends, but we can't be in the same room without trying to tear each other limb from limb. So I made the executive decision to dump them on Lena here, since she'll be more likely to see Lucifer.
Speaking of suit, Daddy, Lena said, running her finger around the lip of her glass of scotch. I officially accepted his job offer after demanding more money and a few other perks.
That's wonderful news, Naomi said. Congratulations, I said. I didn't mean to make it sound like a question, but that was how it came out. Lena laughed.
Thanks. I'm excited. I finally get to pull back the curtain and get my hands dirty.
What perks did you hold out for? I asked.
He has to be nicer to you.
Oh my God, you did not negotiate me into your employment contract, did you? I didn't want Lucian Rollins thinking I needed someone to stand up for me.
It was more a passing comment than a demand, Lena assured me. Interestingly enough, when he found out that you two were going to be in town today, he said I should invite you to the office.
Naomi turned to me, looking like she was about to implode with happiness.
What?
I demanded defensively.
He finds out that you're going to be in town with Lena and invites you to the office. You don't think that sounds like the exact opposite thing a man would do for his sworn enemy? She said pointedly.
Sworn enemy is a little harsh, I said, thinking of the breakfast burrito and my mother's spa day.
And he invited us, not me. I don't know. My instincts tell me he wants you there, Lena insisted.
He does not. Maybe he was just pretending to be human to his new employee. Or maybe he has a crush on Naomi, like all men with a penis and half a brain do. Naomi tossed her hair and pouted like a supermodel.
It's true. Six men fell into manholes so far today, she said breathily.
I snorted. Lena held up her hands.
Okay, fine. Full disclosure, he's not even supposed to be in the office this afternoon, so maybe he offered it up knowing he wouldn't be around to fight with you.
I was not about to think about recognizing the tiny sliver of disappointment that news brought on. Naomi, on the other hand, looked fully deflated.
But seriously, aren't you the least bit curious why he'd extend the invitation? Lena pressed.
Nope, I lied.
Well, I've always wanted to see where he works. Does he really have a throne made out of the bones of his enemies? Naomi asked.
I was just going to give you the files to give to him next time you were in the office, I told Lena.
Yeah, but aren't you just the least bit curious to see behind the frowny rich guy curtain? I have to admit, it's pretty impressive, she prodded. You could deliver the files straight to his very expensive desk so you can tell your mom that you tried to give them to him personally. Maybe we could even use his in-office espresso machine.
Naomi clapped her hands.
Ooh, espresso! Please, 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 Sloane!
It wasn't smart, but part of me really wanted to see where Lucien Rollins ran his evil empire. Besides, the longer I stayed down here, the higher the chances a hot local guy on the app would slide into my DMs. There was a possibility that I could help Lena find a dress, tour Lucien's evil empire, and get laid all in the same day.
I guess we could stop by and see your new office, I mused, since we're here and all.
Naomi and Lena shared a triumphant matchmakery look.
Stop making that face or I'll change my mind.
9. Canoodling with the Devil. Sloane. The offices of Rollins Consulting took up the entire 14th floor of a pricey-looking building with a pricey-looking view. Everything from the marble floor of the reception area to the dark wood-paneled walls whispered wealth and power. There was fancy art on the walls and real plants in gold pots.
I need to see your IDs, said the woman behind the front desk.
She was somewhere in her mid-50s to early 60s and had the ramrod posture of a career military woman. She was looking at Naomi and me like she thought we might try to steal a painting off the wall or stuff our purses full of espresso pods. The nameplate indicated that her name was Petula. I found her both terrifying and fascinating.
They're friends of mine and Lucien's, Lena insisted.
Well, that was a blatant lie.
Petula didn't appear to be impressed.
Just because they're friends now doesn't mean they won't be enemies later, she said. I will accept a driver's license, military ID, or passport.
Naomi raced to comply, digging through her purse like it was a scavenger hunt. I pulled my driver's license out of my wallet and was just handing it over when ex-U.S. Marshal Nolan Graham entered the lobby space through a pair of smoked glass doors.
Blondie!
Nolan!
He looked good, healthy and happy, and that made me happy. I opened my arms for a hug. He wrapped me up and plucked me off the floor, leaving my feet dangling. We had dated, barely. Not even long enough for more than a very nice kiss or two before his heroic injury changed the trajectory of his career and personal life. Lucien, for reasons that remained shrouded in mystery, offered Nolan a job with his firm, a position that made it possible to win back his ex-wife, Callie. I may not have ended up with a hot U.S. Marshal boyfriend, but at least I'd gotten a new friend out of the deal.
How's the bullet hole?
My question ended in a gasping giggle when he gave me a tight squeeze before setting me on my feet again. His answer was interrupted by the sound of multiple throats clearing. I glanced around and spotted Lena, Naomi, and even Petula looking as wide-eyed as Taylor Swift's front-row audience.
Oh, hey, boss,
Nolan said, taking his time releasing me from his embrace. Shit. A familiar blaze of heat swept my back from head to heel. It always made me wonder if the man commanded the powers of actual hellfire.
So how are you doing?
I asked Nolan again, determined not to address the threat behind me.
All healed up, he said.
Don't listen to him,
The big baby was just whining Friday about the winter wind making his bullet hole ache, Lena interjected. I'm a hero. Heroes are allowed to whine, Nolan insisted with a smirk.
How is the soon-to-be missus? I heard you're eloping, I said, ignoring the fact that my back was bathed in flames. Nolan's grin showed every tooth in his mouth.
She's great. We're great. Heading to St. Croix in a few weeks to make things official. Again.
His happiness was palpable. I squeezed his arm. Congratulations. I'm so happy for you two. I really was. Everyone around me was falling in love and getting married and starting or growing families. It was making me acutely aware of my current single status.
Ladies?
The deep rumble of Lucian's voice vibrated its way up my spine. I turned slowly and drank in the godlike hotness of Lucifer himself. It was impossible not to. It was like standing in a room with a great work of art and trying not to memorize every masterful brushstroke. Lucian was annoyingly attractive in yet another impeccable dark suit with a crisp Oxford and a gray and blue striped tie. I wanted to grab that tie and yank on it until that perfect facade cracked. His thick, dark hair waved away from his face in a too-perfect style that begged for someone to mess it up. He was too perfect. It was unnatural. He scanned me, as he always did, and for once, I wondered what he was seeing. In contrast to his perfectly polished exterior, I was wearing snug army green cargo pants and a lightweight violet turtleneck. My hair was in a high ponytail, and my lips were a murderous red. Was it my imagination, or did his gaze linger a little longer than necessary on my mouth? Why the hell did I feel so alive when we locked gazes? Was someone going to say something, or were we just going to stare eyeball flames at each other all day?
I hope you don't mind that we're here, Naomi said, breaking our staring contest with her polite people-pleasing.
I looked away when she greeted him with a friendly hug. Petula, I noticed, was watching me with a calculating expression.
Lena told us the good news, and we wanted to come see where she'll be officially working.
Naomi continued as if it were her job to smooth over the awkwardness that happened whenever Lucian and I had the misfortune of being in a room together. Lena narrowed her eyes.
I thought you were supposed to be out for the afternoon, she said to her new official boss.
I was,
Lucian said, curtly cutting her off.
My schedule was rearranged due to unforeseen circumstances.
Those deep, sterling eyes came back to me. The man probably had security alert him the moment I stepped in the building, and he'd returned, why, to make sure I didn't set his office on fire?
You're supposed to alert me to any and all schedule changes when they occur,
Petula reminded him. I smirked, entertained by the big, powerful egomaniac being chastised by the no-nonsense admin.
I'll try to remember that in the future, Petula, he said dryly.
Lucian was still watching me, and I felt capable of doing nothing but staring back. Lena snapped her fingers and bobbed her head.
So...
It looked as though we were back to awkward.
Find a dress?
Nolan asked her. Lena nearly sprained an elbow reaching for her phone.
I did. And bridesmaid dresses. What's Callie wearing for your beach ceremony?
Nolan reached for his phone, and the two of them put their heads together over wedding dresses.
You're giving me regrets about hiring you both,
Lucian said irritably. Lena looked at Nolan.
I think he's feeling left out.
You're right,
Nolan agreed.
They sandwiched their grumpy boss between them and began scrolling through their photos, explaining each in excruciating detail.
"You're fired," he said as he extricated himself from the huddle. "Enjoy your visit," he told Naomi, then headed for the glass doors without sparing me another glance.
Lena gave a satisfied sigh.
"That was fun." "Your guests are cleared for their visit," Petula said, returning our IDs. She looked disappointed, as if she'd been hoping for a security breach.
"Did she just run a background check on us?" I whispered to Nolan.
"Yep, and a credit check."
"Wow."
"Enjoy your tour. I've got to go meet an anonymous source about a top secret thing," he said.
I couldn't tell if he was kidding or not. Knowing Lucian's shadowy business dealings, anything was possible. "Good to see you, Nolan."
"You too, Blondie. Don't be a stranger."
Lena buzzed us through the double glass doors with a key card. I blinked in surprise. I'd spent years fantasizing that Lucian ran his empire of evil from a dungeon-like lair with sweaty stone walls and a sulfuric-scented fog. But this was not that. There was an acre of trendy cubicles inhabited by dozens of employees, none of whom looked like they were here against their will. Employees of all ages, races, and fashion senses congregated at communal tables and in glass-walled conference rooms. It was busy, but not chaotic. Some people were actually laughing.
"Wow," Naomi said.
"Where are all the instruments of torture?" I asked.
"He keeps those in a separate location, bloodstains on the carpet and all," Lena said breezily.
"Wait up, Lena!" A freckled redhead who looked like the perfect combination of dazed and happy came to a screeching halt in front of us.
"Petula sent me to see if you'd like any coffee or water or tea."
Her hair was pulled back from her face in an intricate half-updo. She had stickers on her fingernails, and beneath her plaid blazer, she wore a Selena Gomez t-shirt.
"This is Holly. She's a new hire like me," Lena said, introducing the woman.
Two spots of pink bloomed on Holly's cheeks, and she looked as if she were going to burst into tears or song.
"This job is a dream come true. Mr. Rollins hired me as an administrative assistant. It's my first real job. My kids are so proud of me, they pack my lunch every morning, and I have to wait until they're off to school and daycare before I can pack something besides animal crackers and string cheese," she explained to us in a rush.
"That's so sweet of them," Naomi said.
"Congratulations," I said, hoping that Lucian wouldn't turn his dragon fire on the poor girl and reduce her to ash.
"Did you say something about coffee?" Naomi asked hopefully. "Because I would love one."
It had been almost 30 minutes since her last hit of caffeine.
"How do you take it?" Holly asked with an eager smile.
"Any way I can get it," Naomi joked.
"I'll bring you my specialty then. Can I get anything for you?"
Holly asked, turning to me.
"I'm fine, thanks."
With my luck, I'd spill an entire mug of coffee all over Lucian's fancy-ass office, and he'd sue me for damages.
"I'll catch up with you on your tour," she promised and darted off.
"She's sweet," I said.
"She really is. 2 weeks ago, she and her two kids were homeless. They left an abusive home and ended up in a shelter. Word is, Lucian hired her on the spot. She started the next day and moved into an apartment last week."
"That's amazing," Naomi said, clasping her hands to her chest.
"Why was he there to hire her?"
"Apparently your arch nemesis is a major sponsor of the program," Lena explained.
"Yeah, well, I guess even ogres can do something good for a tax write-off," I muttered. I didn't enjoy stumbling onto evidence that contradicted everything I believed about the man. I liked having him well-defined. For years, heck, decades, he'd been nothing but a two-dimensional caricature of a villain. Now, however, I was beginning to wonder what other signs of humanity I'd missed beneath those custom suits and heartbreaker cheekbones.
If there was a hypothetical heart that beat somewhere inside that broad, wealthy chest, what did it mean that he still hated me? Lena continued our tour, showing us an impressive array of break rooms, conference rooms, and offices. Hers was a light-filled, minimalist space with a desk, a couch, and a great view. There was a picture on her desk of her and Nash strapped to a parachute. "So what exactly do you do here?" I asked, trying out the couch.
"The firm's primary purpose is to support candidates as they run for and hold office."
"So you dig up dirt on political rivals, blackmail them, and if that doesn't work, have them disappeared?" I guessed. "Do you hide the bodies or are you further up the chain?" "Sloan," Naomi hissed.
"There's an entire supply closet dedicated to corpse disposal down the hall," Lena joked, spinning around in her ergonomic desk chair.
"Everyone here seems so happy," Naomi said, trying to switch to a more positive subject.
"It's hard not to be," Lena said. "The pay is well above fair, the benefits are generous, and the boss is a beautiful beast of a man who no one wants to disappoint."
I sniffed. "I guess if you're into the whole fire and brimstone thing." Both women eyed me.
"Even you have to admit that Lucian is unnaturally good-looking," Naomi prodded. "Good-looking?" Lena snorted. "The man looks like the hottest gods in the universe got together and made the hottest baby in the universe. I'm not convinced that he's mortal. Has anyone ever seen him sleep?"
I had. Those inky lashes against bronze skin, the slow and steady cycle of breaths that made his chest rise and fall. But even sleep couldn't steal the tension from that marble jaw. I hated that I had those memories in my head waiting to sneak up and punch me in the feels. Guilt, fear, fiery, righteous anger.
"Vampires don't need sleep," I said. "Which way is the restroom?"
The bathroom was like the rest of the office, sedately fabulous and stupidly luxurious. The backlit granite vanities held baskets of high-end hand lotions, glasses cleaner, and tidy selections of feminine products. There was even a makeup mirror and counter built into an alcove. I dampened a towel so soft it had to be cashmere and held it to my cheeks. The past few weeks had made me question everything I'd been so sure of. Things I believed in like they were immutable laws of nature. I could always count on my parents. There was no rush to start my own family. Lucian Rollins was a horrible troll of a human being. Now I felt lost, like I had somehow stepped into an alternate dimension where up was down and down was purple. I couldn't handle any more change at the moment. I patted my face dry. Then, because the supplies were there, I cleaned my glasses. "This is all just part of the grieving process," I told my reflection. "You don't really care if Lucian is human or not. Your brain is just trying to find something else to obsess over. Things will get better. Eventually. Probably." Half-assed pep talk complete, I exited the restroom and ran smack into a hot, hard chest. My tote hit the floor with a thump as big, warm hands steadied me. I knew who it was without looking at his face. I knew it from the electrifying current that streaked through my body.
"Is looking where you're going too much to ask from you?"
Lucian said gruffly.
"You're the one plowing past the ladies' restroom at 100 miles an hour, I pointed out, giving him a shove.
He didn't budge. And that irritated me. I was the one who conceded and took a step backward. I reached down for the straps of my bag, but he got there first.
"Jesus, what are you carrying in here? A dismembered body?"
"Why do men always feel the need to comment on the weight and contents of a woman's purse?" I asked, lunging for the straps.
He held the bag out of my reach.
Curiosity. We can only carry what fits in a wallet or a briefcase. This feels like an entire set of encyclopedias.
If you must know, they're Dad's files. I found them this morning and was going to give them to Lena to give to you.
You were going to give them to Lena,
he repeated, his voice dangerously calm.
Yes, I confirmed.
Rather than me.
Something prickled at the back of my neck. Danger. Beware. Proceed with caution. I ignored the warning.
Yep.
Why?
Why?
It was apparently my turn to play parrot. You know why.
Elaborate,
he insisted.
No.
He fixed me with a glare, then turned on the heels of his very expensive loafers and marched down the hall with my bag.
Hey!
I had to jog to keep up with his long, well-dressed legs. That bag didn't just have files. It had all my essentials, like car keys, lipstick, tablet, pepper spray, and snacks. He stepped through a doorway, and I followed him inside, not realizing until he was closing the glass door behind me that I'd just voluntarily entered the devil's den. Lucian's office. Of course it was in a corner, and of course it was huge with breathtaking views. It was cold, formal, impressive. I thought of my own cozy, chaotic office.
Weird.
I expected it to smell like brimstone, but I'm catching whiffs of fish, I said, sniffing the air. Lucian swore under his breath.
Okay, what is your problem, Lucifer? I demanded.
You. Once again, it's you.
Give me my bag back.
Instead of handing it to me like an adult, he set it on the very expensive-looking coffee table in front of a pricey-looking white sofa. Had the guy never heard of IKEA? He pointed toward my tote bag.
Give me the files.
I sat with a huff on the silk upholstery and pulled the tote across the coffee table's marble surface.
I don't know why you're getting so pissed off when you're proving my point. This is exactly the reason I was going to give the files to Lena in the first place, I grumbled.
Do you think I want to dislike you?
I looked up, startled by the sharpness of his tone. He was dragging one hand through those dark, polished waves of hair while patting his pockets with the other.
If you even think about lighting up a cigarette in here...
Don't even pretend you didn't help yourself to a drag of the last one I had in your presence, he said.
I felt color flood my cheeks.
Oh, shut up!
I yanked the files free, and out came two library books, my cosmetics bag, and half of my snack stash.
And yes, I do think you want to dislike me. I think you love to hate me.
He stood, legs braced, hands on hips like he was preparing for battle. I pretended not to notice the clench of his already well-defined jaw under the perfection of his beard. The guy had been a gorgeous teenager, and Lena was right. He'd grown up to be a damn god. Sometimes life just wasn't fair.
Here are the damn files that you can give to the damn attorney so you can keep looking like a damn hero to my mother.
I shoved the stack toward him, then spied the Mary Louise Upshaw news clippings in the pile and snatched them back. Quickly, I returned the clippings and the rest of the spillage to the bag and stood. Slinging the straps over my shoulder, I made a move for the door.
I don't love to hate you.
The words, spoken softly, brought me to a halt. I turned to face him, and then, because I was feeling temperamental, I closed the distance between us.
What do you want, Lucian?
I demanded, looking up at him. He said nothing. I knew there were feelings and ideas and a freaking personality beneath that beautiful surface. But he'd cut me off from it all.
You treat me like I'm the worst person on the planet, and then you do sneaky nice things for my parents. You hire homeless single mothers. You pick fights with me, and then you have my favorite burrito delivered. How in the hell do you know what my favorite burrito is anyway?
He took a step toward me, but I held up a hand before he could answer.
You know what? Never mind. I don't want to know. The only thing I do want to know is, what do you want from me?
For one brief, shining moment, the man looming over me like a pissed-off vampire about to take a bite looked as miserable as I felt.
I want you not to matter at all, he said.
His tone was calm, but there was heat. A silvery fire in those gray eyes. It was rude, I'd give him that. But it felt like a damn victory. A heady one. I was tired of being the temperamental one. Of feeling like I was the only one driven to distraction by our mean-spirited back and forths. I mattered to him. And he hated that.
Back at you, big guy.
You should go, he said suddenly.
Why? Don't you like having me here in this very nice office?
I wandered over to his desk. It was a huge pane of glass with sharp corners, empty except for a keyboard, mouse, and two monitors. I wondered if he liked order or just hated chaos. I trailed my fingers along the beveled edge, knowing full well I was leaving smudges.
You seem upset, I said, pausing and locking eyes with him.
Want to talk about it? I offered before hopping up to perch on the glass surface. His gaze darkened dangerously, and he took a few steps in my direction before stopping. My heart rate kicked up.
I don't like who either of us becomes when we're together, he said.
I scoffed. You think I like this?
I think you love it.
Had he moved closer, or was I leaning toward him? My knees were almost close enough to brush the sharp creases of his trousers. We were magnetized to each other, enemies drawn together again and again. I was so damn tired of it. There was an electric tension growing in the space between us, like when the hair on your arm stands up just before a lightning strike.
I don't, I insisted huffily.
Then my knees were brushing his legs, and he was stepping between them, parting my thighs as I craned my neck to look at him. My breath caught. His fingers flexed at his sides, and then they ghosted over the tops of my thighs, before he planted his hands on either side of my hips. God, he even smelled gorgeous. Lucian dominated my senses. The subtle gray stripes in his tie matched his eyes exactly. The heat pumping off his body felt like I'd entered a sauna. His scent was crisp, clean, deadly. I could hear a heartbeat, and it was loud enough to think maybe it belonged to both of us.
You do. You think that one of these days you'll land exactly the right insult, and you'll be able to see through my cracks.
His voice was barely above a threatening whisper. His gaze was locked on mine. It created a strange gravity, as if I couldn't look away or I'd somehow just float off without that anchor. I didn't know what was happening here, but I did know I didn't want him to stop talking. I didn't want him to step back. What would I see beneath those cracks? I asked. He closed his eyes and shook his head, trying to break the spell. But I wasn't going to let him. Not this time. I reached out and did what I'd fantasized about for years. I grabbed his perfect tie and yanked him closer.
"Do not play with me, Pixie," he growled.
His words were a warning, but those eyes were open now, and I saw something else in them. Something fiery. My biological instincts were scrambled. Instead of fight or flight, my body seemed to have added a third option. Fuck. "Don't call me that," I breathed.
"Then stop looking at me like that."
"Like what?" I whispered. His thumbs simultaneously brushed the outer curve of my rear end where it met his desk, and I absolutely almost lost consciousness. This didn't feel like hate. This felt like something much more dangerous.
"Like you want me to."
The unflappable Lucian Rollins lost his train of thought as he looked at my mouth. The rawness I saw on that gorgeous face both terrified and fascinated me. I wondered briefly if Lena's heart condition was contagious because my heart seemed to be limping along like it forgot how to beat properly. "This is a horrible idea," I said in a near whisper.
"Worst I've ever had,"
he agreed. Neither of us moved. Neither of us came to our senses. "I'm exhausted by us," I admitted.
"I hate us,"
he countered. My fingers began to ache, and I realized I still had them locked around his tie. His mouth hovered over mine, not quite touching. We were breathing the same air as our bodies caught fire. My head was spinning, flinging away all logic as I clung to the one thing that felt right. Him. I wanted this. I wanted him.
"Excuse me, sir."
Lucian didn't move, but I sure as hell did.
"It's time to unhand the librarian. Her friends are waiting, and you have an emergency call from Boston on the line,"
Petula announced briskly from somewhere behind Lucian's broad chest. With a yelp, I launched myself forward in a panicked attempt to slide off the desk. But instead of dismounting, I only managed to crash my crotch into Lucian's. I was sandwiched, suspended in the canyon of space between the edge of his desk and what could only be described as a mega erection. My legs were draped over his thighs in what would have been the perfect position for getting railed. "Oh, God," I squeaked. If I could feel how hard he was, did that mean he could feel how wet I was? This was knowledge neither of us needed the other to have. Lucian's nostrils flared, and his hands were now gripping me by the hips. Hard.
"Out,"
he snapped without looking away from me.
"No,"
Petula decreed.
"You pay me to maintain order, not to tolerate your blatant disregard of your schedule. You do not have time to canoodle with Ms. Walton. It will have to wait." "Canoodle?"
There was a hysterical edge to my tone, and for one fleeting moment I thought I caught the flash of amusement on Lucian's face, but it was gone as quickly.
"Ms. Walton was just leaving,"
Lucian said coldly. He gripped my hips with powerful fingers and placed me firmly on the floor. He gritted his teeth and took a step back. The silk of his tie, the only thing that still tethered us to each other, slid through my fingers. Feeling petty, I grabbed the tail end of his tie and flipped it saucily over his shoulder. "See you around, Lucifer."
10. Annoyed and hungry. Lucian. "You seem tense," Emery observed. "Tense?" Why would I be tense? Just because I've got clients to deal with, the FBI moving at a snail's pace, an exasperating woman interrupting my schedule, a tale that smells like the Hugo crime organization. There's no reason to be tense, I snapped. The city streets were always bumper to bumper in black luxury SUVs, but I'd still made the tale when I'd been alerted to Sloan's arrival. I hadn't been able to deal with the security issue because I'd needed to see her. I'd been compelled to ignore the situation I could have easily dealt with because I wanted to see her in my offices. I wanted to be there when she saw what I'd built. And then I'd gone and lost every shred of discipline. I'd forgotten the most basic of lessons. Sloane's proximity to me brought her too close to danger. It always had. My friend steepled his fingers over his rounded belly and waited expectantly. I realized I hadn't even taken a seat. I'd been pacing in front of the man's fireplace since the minute I arrived. We were meant to be having dinner tonight. But one look at me when he opened the door and he'd shed the apron and waved me into his home office. I brought my fingertips to my forehead. Sorry, Emery. I'm ruining our dinner. It had been a long time since I'd felt this out of control. I needed to lock down my feelings to put a stop to the images that played incessantly in my head. Those green eyes at half-mast, the red lips parting. He waved away my apology. It's a casserole. It'll keep. You burnt it, didn't you? He grinned ruefully. I'm surprised you didn't notice the charcoal smell. I hadn't noticed anything. I needed to calm the fuck down. She's infuriating, I said, resuming my pacing. The FBI agent? No, Sloan. Chuckling, he heaved himself out of his leather recliner and crossed to the brass bar cart he kept under a painting of stormy seas challenging a wooden ship. I leaned against the mantel and willed myself to stop thinking about how it had felt to have Sloan pinned between me and my desk. Emery poured two glasses of wine from a shapely decanter. He was wearing a black wool sweater covered in neon fish over a checkered button-down. That sweater deserves to be set on fire, I observed when he handed me one of the glasses. He looked like someone's kindly, hapless grandfather. I wondered briefly what he thought of when he looked at me. Did I look like the CEO of a multi-million-dollar company? Did I look like I could be someone's husband, someone's father? Or did I look like the villain I was? Let's table the subject of the exasperating Sloan temporarily and go back to the part about you being followed by an organized crime syndicate, he suggested, indicating the second chair. I didn't lead them here if that's what you're worried about, I said as I reluctantly sat. Came the pointed reply. I blew out a breath. I was, as Emery would have said in our therapy days, coloring others' words with my ego's definitions. Nowadays, he only had to hum for me to get the message. I know you well enough to understand you take every precaution to protect those you care about. My concern is for you. Do you give yourself the same care? Can't you just tell me how to stop feeling all these feelings so I can focus on what needs to be accomplished? I asked, staring into the glass. If we were in a session, I'd say something thought-provoking about how sometimes the feelings we resist the most are the ones that have the most to teach us. Then we could discuss why, in an itemized list of situations anyone would find challenging, you're most concerned with a woman from your past, one you claim to have nothing but animosity toward. But we're just two friends about to order pizza, so we don't have to eat the smoking meteor in my kitchen. As a friend, I'll ask this. Why is a visit from a public librarian more disconcerting to you than the fact that a mob boss might be aware you're helping the FBI build the case against him? Because I was in control when it came to Anthony Hugo. Because I knew how to deal with men like that. Because I savored their ruin. Because she reminds me of a past I'd rather forget, I said out loud. She betrayed me when I was vulnerable. And today, she'd spread her thighs for me, perched on my desk, like she belonged there. Like she wanted to be there. Like she wanted me there. I shook the images out of my head and replaced them with another older, darker memory. Sloane looking broken-hearted and brave, her arm in a sling, those emerald eyes glittering with defiant tears. "What did you do?" I'd shouted at her. What I'd meant but hadn't said was, "What did he do?"
"Lucian, you're a smart man,"
Emery stated as he peered at me over the rim of his glass. I already didn't like where this was going. "What are you getting at?"
"As a reasonably intelligent man, I'm going to assume that you know you can't just forget the past or pretend it doesn't exist. And as you've spent significant time in therapy with a brilliant therapist, I'll remind you that the only way out is through. You can't just keep putting your emotions in a box with a lid and expecting them to stay there. That's not what feelings do."
"Then I'll remind you that we both know why letting those emotions out of their box is dangerous."
"You have a lot more control than you give yourself credit for," he pointed out.
"That control hinges on not letting my emotions get the better of me. There's a difference between quelling impulses that everyone has and refusing to acknowledge any feeling at all." I scoffed. "I have feelings that I acknowledge all the time."
"For instance?" Emery prompted.
"For instance, I'm hungry and annoyed right now." My friend chuckled.
"Pepperoni and sausage?"
"Fine."
"Lucian, I don't pity you for what you went through as a child any more than I excuse you from doing the hard work of realizing you are a whole, complicated man capable of not only experiencing happiness, but sustaining it."
"Why is everyone so obsessed with happiness? There are other aims a bit more worthy than walking around with an idiotic grin on my face.
Let me say this. You're a grown man who has achieved wild levels of success, which in itself is impressive. But when you factor in your upbringing, it's downright miraculous. Trust yourself to handle having feelings, even the uncomfortable ones."
The man gave me too much credit. He didn't know what I was capable of, but I did. I exhaled slowly.
"Out of curiosity, what did she do this time that aggravated you?"
Emery asked, his eyes dancing behind his half-moon spectacles. "She got fingerprints on my desk," I said testily. Our bickering had always turned me on. It was a weakness that made me feel pathetic. But today she'd taunted me on my own turf, and my cock had risen to the occasion so swiftly I'd gone lightheaded. I'd wanted her, I'd craved her, and I would have had her right there on that desk. Maybe that was the answer. Maybe this torturous tension between us would finally vanish if we gave in, just once. Emery chuckled.
"Sooner or later, my friend, you'll learn that embracing the messiness of life is where you find its greatest treasures."
"I prefer my orderly piles of money, thank you." But I wasn't thinking about bank balances. I was thinking about Sloane, thighs spread, red lips parted, as I finally thrust home.
"Come on, let's order our dinner, and then I'll let you trounce me at a game of chess."
11. Shania Twain is a beautiful badass. Lucian, 23 years ago. "Here we go," Simon Walton said as he set a Garfield coffee mug that said, "I wish this were lasagna," at my elbow. We were facing off in the breakfast nook in the Walton's kitchen, a room that was almost the size of the entire first floor of my house. Leaves of orange and rust whispered on the other side of the angular windows above the banquette. On the freshly painted turquoise table between us sat a worn chessboard mid-battle. "Thanks," I said, still frowning at the board. I liked that he didn't question me or make fun of me for asking for coffee. Men drank coffee. I was learning to like it. I closed my fingers around the knight's head and moved it deeper into enemy territory. "Remember, you can't just go on the attack willy-nilly," Mr. Walton explained. "You need to have a plan, a strategy. You can't just think about what you're going to do. You have to predict what your opponent is going to do." With that advice, his bishop neatly destroyed my knight. "Damn it," I muttered, picking up the coffee. Mr. Walton grinned. No quitting. See it through. Annoyed, I sacrificed a pawn. And that's checkmate, Mr. Walton said, nudging his glasses up his nose. I slouched against the yellow-patterned cushion. I don't think I like this game. I have a feeling with a little more practice, you'll find your stride. It's just like what you do on the football field from inside the pocket. It was a November Sunday afternoon, which meant no game, no practice, no escape from the hell I lived next door. Dad was out fishing with friends. Mom was where she spent most of her free time when my father wasn't around, alone in her bedroom. I'd spotted Mr. Walton in his backyard deadheading flowers and volunteered to help. How are the chess lessons going? Karen Walton asked, sweeping into the room with two bags of groceries. Great, Mr. Walton insisted. Terrible, I said. We both rose from the table and each relieved her of a bag. While Mr. Walton laid a loud kiss on his wife, I busied myself with delivering the bag to the huge central island. There were small messes and chaos here. A haphazard stack of cookbooks, a flour spill next to the porcelain container that no one had gotten around to cleaning up. The bowl of apples sat half on and half off a magazine open to an article about sending kids to college. Messes weren't tolerated in my house. Anything that might be a trigger had to be avoided at all costs. There's more in the car, Mrs. Walton announced, giving Mr. Walton an embarrassing pat on the ass. Affection was something else that didn't exist at my place. We'll get them, Mr. Walton insisted. Treat yourself to a cup of coffee while my protege and I unload. What would I do without you two? And I think I'll have wine instead, Mrs. Walton said, giving me an affectionate pat on the arm as she headed toward the large built-in china cabinet that housed a menagerie of mismatched bar glasses. I didn't quite manage to hide the wince when her fingers accidentally came in contact with my latest bruise. The Waltons drank. There was wine at the dinner table, and I saw Mr. and Mrs. Walton sometimes enjoying cocktails on the front porch. But I never saw either of them drunk. That was the difference between Mr. Walton and my father, self-control. Maybe that was what he was trying to teach me on the chessboard. Football injury? Mr. Walton asked, looking at my arm. Yeah, I said, tugging the sleeve of my shirt down to cover the bruise. The lie stuck in my throat. Mrs. Walton crooked her finger at me and pointed up. I hid my smile. I liked being needed, even if it was just for my height. I found her favorite long-stemmed wine glass with flowers etched on it on the top shelf and handed it to her. She wiggled it in her husband's direction, asking a silent question. Mr. Walton gave her a geeky thumbs up, and I pulled a second glass off the shelf. Lucian, I don't like you playing that game, she lectured, taking the second glass and heading to the counter. She put the glasses down, rummaged through one of the bags, and produced a bottle of wine. There are too many ways to get hurt. And yes, young bodies heal faster, but you don't know what that kind of damage can add up to later in life. The boy is starting quarterback in his senior year, love, Mr. Walton pointed out. He's not quitting the team and taking up knitting. Nobody said knitting, she said. What about softball? Sloane hardly ever gets hurt. Where is our daughter, by the way? I'd been wondering the same thing for the last 2 hours, but had refused to ask. On a date with the Bluth boy, Mr. Walton said with an exaggerated eyebrow wiggle. I stiffened. This was news to me. We'd talked about it. Not at school, because we never talked at school. It was some unspoken rule between the two of us. She probably thought I was an asshole, the popular quarterback who thought he was too good to be seen talking to the sophomore bookworm. I forget. Do we like him or not? Mrs. Walton asked, inserting the corkscrew. Jonah Bluth was a punk-ass junior defensive tackle who'd made the mistake of running his mouth in the locker room about Sloane Walton's tits that he was going to get his hands on. I'd waited until we'd gotten out on the practice field before I hit him hard enough to knock some sense into him. Unfortunately for him, that sense didn't tell him to stay down, and Nash had been the one to pry us apart. I'd told Sloane in no uncertain terms to dump Jonah's ass. She'd demanded to know why. For some reason, she felt like she had the right to know everything about everything. It was infuriating and endearing at the same time. I told her he was an asshole and that she deserved better. Both truths. She said she'd think about it, which apparently meant she was going to do what she damn well pleased, no matter what. I think we're withholding judgment to see if our daughter likes him, Mr. Walton said. Then he beckoned to me. Come on, Lucian. I'll tell you about the Scandinavian defense while we cart in the groceries. I'm making your second favorite for dinner tonight, Lucian. Frozen ravioli with store-bought sauce, Mrs. Walton called after us. I didn't recognize the warm feeling in my chest, but I liked it. The metallic tang of blood filled my mouth. My arms and shoulders sang from the half-dozen bruises I'd have to hide. My jaw ached from his fist, and for once, the knuckles on my right hand were bruised and split. The blow had surprised us both. Worse. He was getting worse, and so was I.
Your father didn't mean it,
Mom said in her whisper of a voice. She always whispered.
He's got a lot on his mind.
We were sitting side by side on the worn linoleum of the kitchen floor in the middle of the mess, like we were two pieces of trash, waiting to be scooped up and disposed of. That's no fucking excuse, Mom. Mr. Walton next door, she flinched. That was what had started it this time when Dad came home stinking of booze. It was always something. Dinner was cold. I'd parked my fourth-hand car wrong. A tone of voice wasn't respectful enough. Tonight, it had been the chess book Simon Walton had given me.
You think you're better than me, Dad had growled. You think that fucking pussy next door is better than me? You think you can read a fucking book and forget where you came from?
There were nights that I prayed to a deity I didn't fully believe in, begging the divine to have him arrested for drunk driving or something worse. It was the only way we were going to survive, though part of me worried that it was already too late. I was filled with the kind of anger that festered deep down, that never found a release, that changed who you were as a person. As hard as I tried, I couldn't seem to unfist my hands. He had done this to me. It wasn't so much the pain, at least not anymore. It was the humiliation. His demands that Mom and I both cater to his every whim, his belief that he was the center of our universe, that our needs were secondary to his own. I was big enough, strong enough, that I could fight him if I had to. He realized that now. He realized it and hated me even more for holding back from doing just that. I didn't want to be him, and he knew it. So he was going to do his best to break me. And if I wasn't there, he continued to break my mother. Broken men broke women. That refrain echoed in my head as I got to my feet, helped my mother to hers, and then slipped out into the backyard. The autumn chill cooled my skin. Dead leaves crunched softly under my feet. I wanted to run, to leave this place far behind and never look back. But without me, it would only be a matter of time before he killed her, before he pushed her too hard or lost control and couldn't stop swinging. I was the only thing keeping her alive. I didn't know why the three of us continued to pretend that college was an option, that I'd actually take the football scholarship I'd worked so fucking hard for. We all knew what would happen if I left. Yet we never spoke about it. We never talked about the dirty secret we shared. I spit out the blood and bitterness into the dark and started to work out the pain in my right shoulder with arm circles. He always knew just where to hurt me, just enough to remind me he could, but not enough for anyone else to take notice. Until tonight, I reminded myself, flexing my jaw, there would be no hiding the bruise on my face. Psst! I stopped circling my arm and peered around the side of my house, beyond the dingy beige siding, past the patches of weeds to the fence that divided good from bad in my life.
and there she was in the window beyond the cherry tree. The good. "What are you doing up? It's late," I scolded in a whisper.
"Couldn't sleep,"
Sloane called back. I wouldn't be able to now either. He wasn't coming back. Not tonight. He'd go to a buddy's house and drink until he passed out. I, on the other hand, would lie there awake, staring at the ceiling, wishing he'd never come back. That he'd drive that truck off a bridge and put us all out of our misery. I looked back at my house. The lights in Mom's bedroom were on. She'd be curling up in that tight ball like she always did after. She used to curl up around me. When times weren't quite as bad. When he wasn't quite as vicious. But somewhere along the way, she'd started curling in on herself, and I became the protector. I should stay. I shouldn't taint Sloane's life with the ugliness of my own.
"I got a new CD. Want to listen?"
she hissed in the dark. "Fuck it," I murmured to myself and entered her yard. The gnarled bark of the cherry tree abraded my hands as I climbed to her.
"Hi,"
Sloane said, pretty and perky in a pair of pajama pants and a David Bowie tank top when I climbed through her window. "Hi," I said, carefully stepping over the books littering her window seat. She had a pillow crease on her cheek under her glasses. Her hair was piled on top of her head, and in knots so messy it was clear she'd been sleeping at some point. She was cute, adorable even. I was drawn to her, but in a way that wasn't what I was used to. "What woke you up?" I asked, uneasily. Her gaze darted to the window and then back again. She raised her chin.
"I don't know."
She was a good liar, but I could still tell. "Did you hear something?" I pressed.
"You're bleeding,"
she said, ignoring my question and jumping into action. My fingers found the corner of my mouth and came away red. "Shit." She grabbed a box of tissues and yanked several free.
"Here, sit."
"No, it's fine. I should go," I said, starting for the window. I should have known better than to bring this here. Just because I was feeling sorry for myself didn't give me the right to bleed all over her room.
"Hey, you can't go. You still haven't apologized for the rock last spring."
"Next time," I said briskly. It was our refrain, our promise that I'd be back, a promise I needed to give serious thought to breaking. I got one foot up on the window seat when she grabbed me by the back of my sweatpants.
"Seriously, Sloane? Let me look at your mouth. I mean the blood on your mouth," she insisted.
She clung to me like one of those fucking burrs you got stuck to your socks after a walk in the woods. "Fine," I muttered. I sat on the cushion between a John Grisham and an Octavia Butler.
"Stay,"
Sloane ordered. "You're bossy for a pixie," I complained. She snorted as she collected the clump of tissues and a glass of water from her nightstand. Her bottle green eyes were solemn as she approached me, and I knew then that she knew. She knew, and she felt sorry for me. My hands closed into fists again.
"So are you ready for your chem test tomorrow?"
she asked. She knew my secret, knew I didn't want to talk about it, so she was just going to clean me up and pretend everything was normal. I didn't deserve her. "Sorry for never, you know," I gestured helplessly.
"Acknowledging me at school?"
Sloane guessed, filling in the blank for me. She had an uncanny knack for knowing what I wanted to say, even when I didn't have the words to say it.
"Yeah."
She shrugged those dainty shoulders and flashed me a smirk.
"Eh, it's fine. It would ruin my street cred if the captain of the football team started paying attention to me."
"Your street cred?" I scoffed. She dunked the tissues into the water and began to gently dab at the corner of my mouth. It felt nice to have someone care.
"People would start expecting me to try out for the cheerleading squad and go to the bonfires at third base. It would cut into my reading time. Plus, I'd have to give up my secret crush on Philip."
"Stage crew Phil is your secret crush?" I teased. "Stage crew Phil's claims to fame were his perfect grades in calculus and the headset he got to wear backstage during school productions
because he was in charge of the curtain. He gave zero shits about what anyone thought of him and went to school in the same jeans and black t-shirt outfit every single day, except for picture day when he wore a bow tie over the t-shirt.
I can't help it. I'm a sucker for a guy with power. Every time I think of him hissing curtain up, I get weak in the knees.
I was smiling in spite of everything. That was the effect she had on me. She was good. Everything about her seemed to sparkle. Good people got good things. Then I remembered Jonah. Your dad said you were on a date tonight. It sounded accusatory, but I couldn't help it.
Relax. I went out with Jonah so I could dump him in person.
I straightened. You broke up?
Mm-hmm,
she said, her gaze glued to my mouth.
He was kind of an ass. You were right.
Say that part again, I insisted. Her lips quirked as she worked.
No.
Come on, I wheedled.
No, and shut up, but seriously,
she continued, pressing the wet wad of tissues to the corner of my mouth.
I understand.
You understand what?
You can't be seen being friendly to a four-eyed sophomore nerd. It would tear a hole in the space-time continuum of high school society.
She didn't know the real reason why I didn't want anyone to know about us. If my father had an inkling that something mattered to me, he destroyed it or ruined it in whatever way he could. The only thing he allowed me to have was football because it meant something to him to have a son who excelled on the field. But if he ever had a hint that Sloane meant something to me, that I valued her, he would inflict damage. And if he did, if he managed to hurt her in some way, I didn't think I could live with that, or let him live.
Nerd,
I said lightly.
Does it hurt?
She asked me, changing the subject again. Her voice was husky and serious now.
It's fine, I lied. Lucian?
Don't, I said.
You don't even know what I was going to say.
Yes, I do.
And it's none of your business.
But not everyone has the family you do, okay? She had no idea what I dealt with on a daily basis, not when she'd been raised by Simon and Karen Walton.
But why can't we go to the cops?
She pressed. The idea of picking up the phone and calling the cops on my father was laughable. Police Chief Wiley Ogden was one of Dad's best friends. I was 10 years old when Wiley had pulled my father over for speeding and swerving between the lines. He was drunk. He'd handed me his open beer can when he pulled over onto the shoulder. The nerves in my belly had just started to unclench. The police would help. We watched videos about this in school. Don't drink and drive. But my dad did. I thought the police would stop my dad from making this mistake, from scaring me, from hurting someone. Someone started early today, Wiley had cackled when he walked up to my father's window. The chief had let him off without even a warning. They'd shot the shit about a fishing boat and made plans to meet up at the bar later that evening. And then Wiley had waved my father back onto the road as if bestowing some kind of special privilege on him.
I just can't, I said tightly. Yes, we can, she insisted.
She kept saying we, as if she was in this too, when that was the last thing I wanted. If she got too close, if she got hurt, I wouldn't be able to hold back. I wouldn't be able to stick to defense. I would end him, and in doing so, I would become him.
If he's hurting you, Lucian,
Sloane's voice broke, and so did a piece of my heart.
Stop,
I whispered, gathering her into my arms as I stood. She wrapped her arms around my waist and held on tight, her face pressed against my chest. I hated how good this physical affection from her felt. It wasn't the way I felt about Brandy Kleinbauer when I'd lost my virginity to her at barely 16, or the hormonal longing I'd felt for Cindy Crawford all through junior high, and it wasn't what I felt for Addie, my on-again, off-again weekend hookup. This was more complicated. I liked Sloane. I wanted to keep her safe, and every time we touched, no matter how innocently, part of me wished for more. But that wasn't an option. I was broken, and she was beautiful.
I didn't know what we were to each other beyond the fact that she was important to me. More important than anyone.
What CD did you get? I asked.
She pulled back from our embrace, and I was both relieved and regretful. Her glasses were askew. Her hair was even more of a wreck. I felt something warm and tender slide through my chest, like I was absorbing her goodness, but it wasn't mine to take.
Shania Twain?
I smirked. You're kidding, right?
What's the matter? Aren't you man enough to listen to girl country?
She bounced over to her bed and picked up her headphones with a challenge in her eyes.
Shania Twain is a beautiful badass. Want to listen?
She looked so sweet and hopeful, her hair lopsided, eyes wide. I wanted nothing more than to lie next to her in that soft bed, in this nice room, in this big house, and be part of it all. And that was exactly why I couldn't. I brought darkness with me. My bruises were contagious.
I should get back and
what? What was left for me at home? Sloane cocked her head.
Please?
It's not a good idea, Pix. What if your parents come in? I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't be anywhere near her.
They're asleep on the other side of the house. And honestly, if you leave right now, I'm just going to spend the whole night worrying about you. I won't be able to sleep. And I'll be so tired tomorrow that I'll fail my trig test. Come on, big guy. Do you really want that on your conscience?
You're ridiculous.
Three songs,
Sloane bargained, hopping onto her bed and patting the mattress next to her. I sighed. She sensed victory and grinned.
One song, I countered.
Two, she insisted. It was selfish and absolutely stupid, I thought, as I towed off my shoes. If Sloane's dad were to come in here and find me in his daughter's bed, he'd never forgive me, even if I tried to explain. He knew how special she was, and he could sense how damaged I was. That was why they were so nice, because they felt sorry for me.
It's come on over, not advanced calculus, Sloane teased.
I climbed onto the bed next to her and resolutely stayed above the duvet cover. But I did let her pile her insane pillow collection around us.
What are you doing?
I asked as she tucked a pillow under my arm.
I'm building a nest. This is how I sleep,
she explained, fluffing the two behind me.
You sleep with 42 pillows every night? It's six, smarty pants, and don't judge me until you've tried it.
I had one pillow and a mattress on the floor after Dad had splintered my bed frame, throwing me on it last summer. I relaxed against the mound of pillows and tried not to think about how good it felt being surrounded by softness. Sloane cuddled up against my side. It was just the two of us, supported by a soft U of pillows.
Is he like this all the time?
She asked, softly. I looked down at my hands in my lap. They were balled into fists again.
Only when he drinks. He just drinks more often now. He still acts normal some of the time.
And it was that act, that pretense, that I hated more. I preferred the monster to the man pretending to care by showing up to football games or taking us out to dinner.
I hate him.
Her voice quivered.
I really hate him.
I slid my arm around her shoulders and cautiously drew her closer. It felt so good that I knew it was wrong.
I don't want you thinking about him. Why can't we tell the cops?
She asked. I shook my head.
It's complicated, okay? Just trust me. Promise me you'll take care of yourself, Lucian. Like if he gets too out of control, you won't let him, you know.
Kill me. Kill my mother. I would kill him first, even if it sealed my fate as a monster, like father, like son, I thought. I promise if you promise me you won't call the cops, ever, no matter what. She took a deep breath and blew it out. Pixie, I prompted,
you have to trust me. Cops would just make it worse.
Her silence lasted too long, and I squeezed her shoulder.
Ugh, fine, but I'm not happy about it. Promise me,
I insisted. She was the daughter of a lawyer. I knew better than to accept, ugh, fine, as an answer.
I promise,
she said miserably. Some of the tension drained out of me with her assurance. Sloane looked up at me with those forest green eyes.
You're not going to college, are you? You can't leave her alone with him.
I looked away.
No, I can't.
She sat up next to me, her small body tight with indignation at the injustice of it.
That sucks. You have to sacrifice your entire future because your dad is a monster and your mom won't leave? It's not fair.
Life's not fair, Pix.
What if I looked out for her?
She offered hopefully. No! The word came out so loud it seemed to echo around the room. We both froze and listened for the telltale signs of waking parents. I grasped her by both shoulders and made her look me in the eye.
You're not to ever get involved. Do you hear me? You don't ever go over there. You don't speak to them. You don't ever draw any attention to yourself. And you don't ever stand between him and someone else when he's been drinking. Okay?
She was wide-eyed and scared, but I needed her to be. I needed to ensure she never went near my father.
Okay, geez, chill out. It was only a suggestion,
she said, looking like I just asked her to set her favorite book on fire. I heaved a sigh.
I'm sorry for scaring you. You didn't scare me. You annoyed me with your intensity.
Three songs, I conceded. She brightened and crawled over me to reach for the earbuds on her nightstand. This time, when I fisted my hands in the bedspread, it had nothing to do with fear or anger. I was having feelings. Normal teenage guy feelings. But I wasn't allowed to have those with Sloane. Mr. Walton trusted me, and I needed that trust. Sometimes the Waltons felt like the only anchor I had. She crawled back across me and handed me an earbud before settling into my side again.
Does Addie know that we do this?
She asked. What?
Addie, your girlfriend?
She's not my girlfriend. Not exactly. She was a girl I'd spent time with in the past few weeks. Some of that time was spent partially naked. But that was because I was 17 and she was trying to make her ex-boyfriend jealous. It wasn't like I talked on the phone with her, or had dinner with her parents, or climbed a tree and crawled through a window at night to